listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Everyone relax. This is TOEFOP.
I'm Charlie Clausen.
I'm Will Anderson.
I just felt like we should
change
it up.
Hello, and thank you for watching.
I'm sorry, not like that. I actually, was that, are you mocking me when you do that weird staccato? You're just trying something.
No, I was like, I started mocking you because you just said it in
a weird
way.
An aggressive way.
I don't know what it was, but it was something.
Everyone relax. I'm Charlie Clausen.
It's like, it didn't make me feel like relaxed.
It was a statement.
I made the opposite of relaxed. I felt really unnerved, honestly, by what had happened. That's okay. Yeah. We're back. It's fine. We're relaxed. Everything's fine.
In a weird way, like, look, everyone knows we're bulk recording. Yes. I have changed my outfit.
Charlie's changed
his outfit.
I've gone
into a longer sleeve, but I am strangely feel colder now than in the longer. I was warmer in my Muji.
Again, let's not.
That's amazing, Will. I got to tell you.
Have you done a secret side with Muji and not told me about this sweet Muji money? Are you in the Muji Moolah?
Muji Moolah. I want some Muji Moolah. I wonder if, because we do endorse a lot of products. Like last year it was Donut King. They got a big plug. And can I say,
when we say endorse, for free.
Yeah.
Not like a paid endorsement.
No, we don't get paid by anyone.
By anyone.
No one. Apart from you, dear listeners, the ones who support us on Patreon. We don't get paid by anyone. We do this out of, but this is what I mean though. Like if these brands were smart, they're like, this is a legitimate endorsement. Mm. Like these guys love our product.
They love to endorse stuff.
Let's see how much we can get out of them. Let's see what we can pay him to do.
So you're saying Muji?
Muji.
And my favorite water is Fuji.
Yeah.
Can we do a Muji Fuji?
Can we do a Muji Fuji la la?
That's what
we want, a sponsorship dollars. Muji Fuji la la. No.
What is that?
That'll
mean?
Be the jingle. We'll do that.
Okay.
Fuji la la.
All right.
Or Muji la la.
This is making me feel uncomfortable now.
Okay, so I won't do it anymore. But on the subject of donuts, so I was in Melbourne a few weeks ago now.
Melbourne, Australia,
In Victoria, the European city of Australia.
Sure.
Because Pink was in town and Iona wanted to see Pink I had an opportunity to take her to see Pink. She'd never been to a concert before and I thought this seems like a good entry level like artist to go see. It's not like Slipknot, you know, it's not Rage Against the Machine. It's not like anything I'd probably go see.
No. I mean, I would have thought that Pink seems like a great, you know, kid's first concert to me because I know nothing really about like what Pink is like in concert other than what you see anecdotally or just like whatever over the years. But you imagine there's acrobatics and like all sorts of like bright colors and big poppy songs, but like girl empowerment sort of 100%. Like vibe.
Yep.
So feels like a great first concert.
Well, I think you and I would probably have the same knowledge of Pink prior to me going to see Pink. And I know who Pink is and I've always liked Pink. She thinks she seems cool and stuff in all her interviews.
She seemed to have had a long association with Australia too.
Yes.
Rove knows Pink.
She addressed that in the concert. So anyway, we were generously offered these tickets and it was standing room tickets like in the front of the stage. And I sort of said to them, look, not to look a gift horse in the mouth, but I said, I'm bringing my four-year-old. I'm not sure how long she'll last. Is it possible to get a seat? Could we sit there? And they're like, look, no, I don't think there's any seats. And I'm like, come on, like it's a bloody stadium. There's got to be at least one seat. When I got there, there was not one seat available. She is incredibly popular. And it's one of those things like, you know, we talked about Robbie Williams a few weeks ago because I'd watched that documentary and I was like, I was aware of who Robbie Williams was, but I wasn't aware of like the fandom associated with Robbie Williams, just how huge he was as an artist. It was kind of similar where like all of Melbourne was having sort of pink fever. And it did feel like it was in the wake of Taylor Swift. She would played Melbourne the week before. So it did sort of feel like, not that like, you know, everyone had got a VHS player and now here's the Betamax, but it did sort of feel like, you know, like it was like you got your Coca-Cola and here's Pepsi. Like it was big, but not as big as,
yeah.
The fervor wasn't as
the vibe
nationwide.
Would have been very much, hey, could I have a Coca-Cola? And they'll be like, will Pepsi be okay? And you'll be like, yeah, sure.
I guess
if that's your
one of those ones that they deliver to your door, the Lloyds. I'll have a Lloyds Cola, thanks.
No, but Pink was, like, this is an interesting time for Pink to be here, really, because from what I know, again, without being
a Pinkologist,
international listeners, like Aussies will understand this. But we've adopted Pink as one of our own. Mm. Like, we think she's one of ours. We do this in Australia.
She has a very Australian personality. Yeah.
There's just something about her that we like and that we warm to in Australia. And she was, until Taylor Swift probably, I think, anyway, for a very long time, she was the top-selling artist of all in the world. At the height of, there was probably never another place.
What do you mean? In the world or in Australia?
So, the point I'm trying to make is that she was... She, in other countries, she might have been like a top five artist or a top 10 artist, but here
she
was the number one artist that Australians went to see for a considerable period of time.
And she mentions that in the concert. She was like, thank God. She's gone, it was because of you guys that the rest of the world were like, are we missing something here? Like, why is she so popular? And then Gemma was telling me, because Gemma had just read this book on the punk scene, and apparently like Australia broke Blondie in the same way, that Blondie... were kind of known and had some hits, but then Countdown and I don't know which single it was, but we made the world go, hey, Blondie, you're okay, you know?
Yeah.
Well, ABBA as well, I think. ABBA broke here first, or at least early.
The Dandy Warhols is a more contemporary one that I remember. Like, the band The Dandy Warhols, you know them, right? Like,
they, Bohemian Like You, or me, or one of us.
Yeah.
One of us is Bohemian.
Bohemian Like Us.
That guy? He's got a head on his head.
It was the one that was in all the car ads before the new Rembrandt.
Yeah, that's right.
Was in all the car ads. And pretty, like, honestly, a good band and had some international success, but one of those bands that were disproportionately, like, successful.
Yeah, and
Australia.
It's funny because we make fun of, like, Germany for loving David Hasselhoff or, you know, Japan for whatever. But we do. We adopt and we love certain artists. So,
and so Pink is definitely has been one of ours.
That's right.
And we're currently in this, the new era, like Taylor Swift eras, where the country has been captivated by Taylor Swift visiting Australia. And so for Pink to be here at the same time as this is kind of like, well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like our favorite aunt.
Yeah. So what's the vibe of that? I'm fascinated in.
I would say there's a lot of crossover for a start.
Yes, of course.
100%.
But is there a sense of that Pink is there in Taylor's shadow, or is there?
She brought it up. Oh. During the concert, she was like, she said, I understand it's Taylor's time right now. And that's cool. Cause Taylor's a badass and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But she was. I mean, it was still 40,000 people Pink was playing to.
Yeah.
It was not like the MCG, but that's...
But
I mean, it's like football, right? Like Collingwood and Richmond play on the MCG and the Saints and the Bulldogs.
Right.
We'll take Marvel Stadium. So it's a similar thing. But the city was like awash with Pink. And it was funny because... So Iona, we'd shown her a bunch of Pink music videos.
Yeah.
And I don't think... Like, she knows what music is, but the whole concept of pop music and you know, the imagery and all that kind of stuff, I don't think she'd really kind of like focused on. And so she did like a speed run of like every Pink music video. And then she's looked at me and she's gone, Dad, I want to sing a song. I'm like, oh, okay. She's like, film me. I'm like, all right. So I get up my phone and she starts freestyling a song in the style of Pink. And she's like, it was adorable because she's doing all like, she just seemed like Pink being all emotional and stuff. So she's like, she's manufacturing this emotion and the lyrics are along the lines of like, I'm walking out the door and I'm saying goodbye and I love my mom. And I'm filming it. It's been going for like 7 minutes. I'm like, and are you done? Oh, yeah, there's another verse. Okay, here we go. And so the day of the concert, we went out and we bought her a little, like, mum, she's just got to get a party outfit. She's going to a party. So we bought her a little pink dress and a little leather vest we felt was very pink, you know, like a leather biker vest to go with her pink tutu. And So on the way in, like, I was like, Jesus, this is fucking crowds. Like, getting in there was like really hard. And the demographic too was so broad.
This I was going to say, what is Pink's audience?
Everyone. Like, everyone is a Pink fan. Like, mainly, I would say, suburban 30 plus, male and female. Like, yep. I was surprised by how many guys were there. I thought she'd have more females, but it seems to be, I would say it was a TOEFOP split, very 50-50. Yeah. That's now the official term for 50-50. It's a TOEFOP split. But there weren't as many teen girls as I'd say Taylor. I think Taylor's captured the hearts and minds because she's a younger artist, right? So she'd probably have more. She's right. Like, Pink's been around for a lot longer.
Oh,
am I right?
I mean, some of those like suburban 30 pluses were
the teenagers.
Teenage fans who were into Pink when Pink was, where Taylor was at. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think there's also like, because her music, like, I was surprised by how many songs I recognized. Uh-huh. Like, the first kind of at least 10 tracks, I'm like, I have heard all of these songs.
Yeah.
But there is this kind of, it's sort of, it sits in between genres. It's kind of pop, rock, dance, you know, so you're ticking off all the quadrants. And so there's something there for everyone. So we go to this little function before.
Acrobatics?
Acrobatics was
she
there.
Does do acrobatics. She still does, like, acrobatics. She still does some like flying through the air sort of stuff. And how does Iona feel about like this? Like, is this like blowing her mind or is she?
So we get to the, well, there's a little function beforehand. So we bump into Rove and a couple other people we know. And, they were like, oh, have you seen Pink before? And I'm like, oh, no. They're like, oh, just wait. Like, you know, she puts on a great show. And so we get to our seats and, you know, starts off with the fireworks and stuff. And it's actually, she's not doing super acrobatics at the start, but then she brings down the silks and starts doing like this sort of, like, what's it called? Like a silk routine where you're spinning around and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I only was like pretty blown away by that. But then she had this, the actual staging wasn't enormous. It wasn't like a giant, it was like a pretty tight band, only like, you know, four or five people in the band and say three backup singers and six dancers who would come on off periodically depending on the genre of the song. But the thing that really stood out beyond all of the kind of pyrotechnics and the staging was Pink, like herself, like her charisma. That's the selling point.
Yes.
Beyond the music. Like, she is so comfortable.
They're there to see Pink put on a show. But spend the night with Pink.
But even I was there to see Pink because she starts talking and she's talking to 40,000 people, but she's talking as if she's talking to you one-on-one. Like, you just sort of, she's so comfortable up there. She's not like over-projecting. She's literally just talking like a spoken word kind of thing. She's walking around and people are throwing her like presents and gifts on stage. And she's just taking her time and picking up each one and looking at it and talking, oh, some Tim Tams and here's a koala backpack. And she's like keeping them all and like taking them back and putting them down. And then, and so the whole time I'm like, there was at least a 10 minute period where there was no songs and there was no entertainment. It was literally just Pink just being super confident and charming and charismatic, just walking around on stage and just sort of bantering with the front row. And just, I was like, this is what stardom is. Like, this is what like separates kind of your
like
average
performer.
Like, imagine
someone's paid $200 for a ticket to your concert and still wants to bring you a present.
No. And it's, and kind of like, and there was at one point, you know, she's talking and she was like, oh, are you okay? I think that person's in distress. That's not a happy wave. And the security weren't paying attention. And she's like, hello, hello. And she's gone over and she starts like yelling at the security guard. And I'm like, this is bizarre. Like, this is just a, it's almost like a meet and greet with 40,000 people.
That's right. And Pink will do some songs in between.
Yeah, she'll do some songs in between like the chit-chatting.
Yeah.
So then, you know, she goes through the whole, the what do you call it, the catalogue of songs, and it gets to, what do you think her encore is? Or the last, she didn't do an encore, but she did a closing number.
One of her songs?
Yeah.
I don't really know a bunch of Pink songs. I'm sure you would know.
Yeah,
I don't know if we played a lot of Pink.
Okay, so what?
So what? I'm a rock star.
So what? Yeah, I'm a rock star. So that's that's her big number. Right. So leading up to that, like it was all her old stuff, that, you know, the big hits, that's all up front. Then there's a bit of new stuff in the middle, like, you know, as most bands do, like just tuck away the new stuff in the middle and then close with a couple other recognizable songs. But she gets, as she's sort of getting to the end of the show, she gets into this harness and I'm like, what's going on here? And then she launches into So What? And she flies up above the stage and is on this kind of four cable harness that can fly her anywhere around Marvel Stadium, but literally at high speed, like Superman. She's like flying over the top tiers of the grandstand and down into the crowd. And then there's these little podiums positioned around this, and she would stop on a podium and balance on one hand or stand on one foot. And I am like, this is fucking incredible. Like, this is the most amazing thing. And she's singing the whole time while she's doing it as well. I look over at Iona and she's just like, nah, you know, like not impressed. And I'm like, dude, like, this is setting.
She wasn't impressed.
I don't know that she wasn't impressed. I just, she wasn't her mind wasn't blown away. And I'm like, you're going to be so disappointed.
Yeah. Well, because she has no standard for what it's meant to be.
No baseline.
So she doesn't realize that she's seeing something that's incredibly great, right?
Pretty amazing. Yeah. Yeah. She had no, I mean, it also may be the time of night it was. Yes. It was late and past her bedtime and
but
stuff
still,
like that.
Someone flying around a stadium, even hearing you talk about it made me think, oh, I wish I was there. Yeah. Imagine finishing your show every night by flying.
Yes.
Like that's built into her night.
Well, it's also funny.
Even though I'm sure it's very dangerous and demanding, if you can do it, which she obviously can because that's like her signature bit, imagine that you've orchestrated. You go out, you have a bit of a town meeting with 40,000 people, make a heap of money, you sing all your favourite songs, and then just before you knock off home, you fly around the stadium for a bit.
Like, it's amazing. And it did sort of make me think,
pick up your pile of presents and go home.
Like talk about like an influencer. Someone threw her a pack of double choc Tim Tams. She's oh, what's this? I've never seen this before. Oh, amazing. I'm going to eat these tomorrow. Yeah. You know what I did the next day?
Went and bought some double chocolate Tams. You're like,
because Pink said I should get some. But it did make me realize, like, you and I, you know, the music that we gravitated towards in the era we grew up in was like grunge.
Yeah.
And that was all about rejecting, you know, the artifice of performance, and it's about the music, and it's like stare at your shoes while you play your guitar and stuff. And I'm like, part of me wishes like that we had, you know, like, what have I denied myself? Like, what kind of cheesy entertainment have I denied myself because of the, you know, the idea of credibility? It's all about, like, you know, don't be fooled by bells and whistles.
Well, I mean, you have time. That's what getting older is for.
Yeah.
Like, getting older is for.
Take yourself seriously when you're young.
Yes. It's for not knowing what's good or bad anymore.
Yeah.
And so just be like, and not caring.
Yeah.
There's a point you get to where you're like, oh, I don't know if this person is like a good rapper or a bad rapper. And I'm not going to go and like Google what people think about whether they're a good rapper or a bad rapper. I like this song.
Yeah.
And I'm going to play it loud when I'm in my car.
And that's when you find out they're like a white supremacist or something like that. And it's like, oh yeah, you shouldn't be singing that. You bring up rappers, and that is a good segue
into
what we're going to talk about, at least for part of this episode.
There's got to be a rapper called Segway, by the way, wouldn't there be? That's a great rap name, Segway.
Segway. Segway.
Because it can be spelled both ways, right?
Segway rolls.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's
there's the Segway, the use of language, the Segway.
Yeah,
so
and but do
as
you
a rapper,
change the spelling of it? Because rappers often change.
Yeah, well, the
Segway.
The Segway is the way that he raps, Seg.
Yeah.
But also, he's the master of the Segway. So.
S-E-G-W-Y, no A, Segway.
or U-E, like Segway. Like
Segway.
You know,
U-E.
Segway is spelled. So.
Yeah. Okay. How's Segway spelled?
U-E. W-A-Y.
It's not S-E-G-W-A. Oh, right, for the machine.
For the Segway in conversation. U-E. Is this good podcast?
Is that right?
I believe so.
Okay. All right. Okay. A Mark's nodding, so
turning into a spelling bee.
Yeah. Okay. So this was sent by Sam.
Yes, Sam.
Who says, hello, gents. Rap beefs have provided some fantastic content for the pod in the past, but they've also mostly been historic with rappers from yesteryear.
True.
Because you're talking to a couple of old men here.
Yep.
Recently, I've been seeing a lot about a beef between Nicki Minaj and Megan Thee Stallion, and I thought, who better to turn to get to the bottom of this new beef? Thanks for all the years of laughs and content. Now, do you know anything about said beef?
I don't really. Like, I am aware of the, like, here's how much I know. All the words you just said to me
you recognize.
Made sense.
Yeah.
But if you asked me a follow-up question, I reckon I could have provided, if you'd said there's a current day rap beef, I reckon I could have told you it was between Nicki Minaj and Megan Thee Stallion.
Okay.
Here's what I could not have told you. What? Anything else other than that, I think.
I reckon I checked out of like my cultural relevance to music. As Nicki Minaj was arriving, I was probably being pushed out of...
One in, one out.
Yeah, that's right.
You were the one who had the
I'm aware of who Nicki Minaj is. Megan Thee Stallion, I got to admit, I don't... Did she... She didn't win the Hottest 100. That wasn't her, right? The Paint the Town Red. That's not... No, okay.
That's Doja Cat.
Okay. You're going to be our source for all information on this subject.
Fabulous.
Because, okay. So that's Doja Cat. Okay. So Megan
She has been in the Hottest 100 before.
Yes.
Can
so
you
she
give
did
us,
WAP with you, Cardi B.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. Oh, okay. I know WAP. All right, good. So we have, I have one cultural touchstone.
So this is me, and is she Megan Thee Stallion?
Yes,
this is
not
the,
double.
T-H-E-E.
Yeah,
Megan Thee Stallion.
Yeah, okay.
Not the Stallion.
So look, I found an article, this is from Vox, which just summarizes the beef. So I thought we could get into it.
Yeah.
And then
that's great.
See where it takes us.
That's what
us.
We need.
Okay, so rap superstar.
I like to be up to date with cultural beefs. Events.
Well, the thing about rap beefs, right, is that in the past, it's always been good for both parties, right?
Well, like, until they like murdered each other and stuff.
Well, I mean, I'm not talking about real beefs. Yeah. I'm talking about the
you mean
record company
beefs.
Yeah. Diss tracks.
Yeah.
Diss tracks are always good. Right. The last diss track I listened to was when Machine Gun Kelly and Eminem had a little bit of Kill Shot and Rap Devil, I think, was the last one I got into. But that seems like a bit of an unfair fight, right? Like if you're going to pick a beef... If you are a rapper the quality of Machine Gun Kelly going up against Eminem, that seems like you are slightly outmatched. The fact that he's shifted his musical style now into pop punk, I think maybe tells you what happened with that beef.
Well, yeah, but I think that that's part of what has made him successful is like a lack of self-awareness about his talent, Machine Gun.
Right.
I think, you know, like, I mean, he's almost... successful despite the fact that like
succeeded despite his
talent. Like I mean I think if he had much self-awareness around his own level of capacity that he would have stopped well before.
He strikes me more as a four quadrant entertainer, which is like I want to be famous if that's as an actor or a rapper or
a partner
or a celebrity couple. I think I saw him pick a fight with Conor McGregor at one point. I'm like, this seems like a bad strategy.
I like tattooed my entire upper body black. Yeah. I believe I saw photos of that.
Yeah. Okay, so this article from Vox is by
Rap Beef.
Kendall Cunningham, which sounds made up.
It does.
Rap superstar Megan Thee Stallion is embarking on a new independent era. It's the era of era as well. Mm. Following a long legal battle with her former record label and the trial of her former associate Tory Lanez for shooting her in the foot. I do remember that incident.
Okay, so she had an associate who shot her in the foot. Yep. Megan Thee Stallion got shot in the foot.
I mean, there must have been some
jokes. It was her partner at the time, I believe. Megan was dating Tory Lanez. And it was a whole thing where people did
shot
not believe
foot.
Her and came after her on Twitter and... And then he got found guilty.
Hang on, did not believe
recently.
That she had been shot in the foot.
Or was she shot in the hoof?
Oh, come on. You can't do that. You can't. Stallion is a name.
Sorry, continue.
Yeah, but people, I don't know, didn't want to believe her. Well, also because then Tory Lanez would have denied it. So then his fans were saying that it didn't happen.
Sure.
So he's a producer or a rapper himself?
He's a rapper
both?
As well.
Okay. Yeah.
But nowhere near as successful as Megan is.
Okay. No. Is it Megan?
Megan.
Is that the American pronunciation? Megan.
Megan.
Megan Thee Stallion.
Megan Thee Stallion.
Okay. Megan seemed poised to turn her traumatic experiences into a compelling, emotionally raw album with an accompanying tour in the works.
Okay.
But first, she had some beef to settle, or maybe not, with her fellow MC and now rival, Nicki Minaj. Last Friday, Megan dropped her latest single, Hiss, in which she takes shots at several unnamed targets. Aside from the general crowd of online haters, fans have linked some of her jabs to Drake and her ex-boyfriend, rapper Partisan Fontaine. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
I don't know that person, so okay. Your guess is as good as mine.
Good. However, one particular lyric, "These hoes don't be mad at Megan, these hoes mad at Megan's law," stood out. It references the federal law requiring information about registered sex offenders to be publicised, which seemed to strike a chord with Minaj. Her husband, Kenneth Zupetti, is affected by this legislation. He's a level 2 registered sex offender in the state of New York. A few days later, the super bass singer counteracted with a diss track. Although she criticised pop bass on Twitter for, it says X, but I'm going to call it Twitter. Fuck Elon Musk. Take that, billionaire, for calling it that. And it was titled Bigfoot. Despite the song racking up millions of views and streams, it has largely been received poorly by critics and social media users across both Megan and Minaj's fan bases. It feels like a turning point in Minaj's career as one of the most respected female rappers in the game. So what started the beef, Will? Take a guess.
Okay. So, Jesus. So much already to deal with is... Because that does feel like that is a pointed line,
yes.
Right? Like because
the Megan's Law one, or
the Megan's Law one. It does feel like it was a pointed line. Nicki Minaj. How are her? I mean, did they work together on something? Was it a fallout in a collaboration of some kind?
They did work together.
Yeah.
Okay, so Minaj and Megan weren't always on bad terms. Mm. In 2019, they collaborated on Megan's single "Hot Girl Summer" and filmed a music video just in matching outfits and wigs.
Yeah.
During the song's release, the two appeared on Instagram Live together and Megan gushed about Minaj on Twitter. In light of recent events, a user replied to Megan's post warning her that "this piece ain't gonna last" has gone viral. So someone read the tea leaves,
Knew
a beef was coming. It seems that this intuition was spot on. So it's unclear when things turned sour between the former acquaintances. Many have speculated that Minaj took issue with Megan's collaboration with Cardi B on WAP.
Yeah, okay.
So,
because they don't get along.
Okay.
So, because I think there's a bit of, now, again, I might be completely wrong on this, but I'm going to wade in with a little bit of I think I know something about this.
You can fact check if you get it completely wrong.
Well, I think that, like, Nicki thinks that, you know, Nicki was the original Cardi B, and then Cardi B's come along.
But wasn't Lil' Kim the original Nicki Minaj?
Oh, yeah, but that's like that old thing on The Simpsons, if you're anyone but blah, 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 you're stealing this bit, you know?
The pair collabed most famously on WAP and more recently on Bongos.
Uh-huh.
Minaj previously sparred with the Bodak Yellow rapper after both featured on Migos 2017. It's like, I'd be reading like a completely different language.
Migos.
2017 song Motorsport, which escalated into a physical altercation. However, in a November 2020 interview, Megan claimed that her relationship with Minaj hadn't changed despite her affiliation with Cardi. Excuse me. By January 2021, Minaj had unfollowed Megan on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
She also released the track Seeing Green, which has a line about alcoholics that is speculated to be about Megan.
See, that one feels a little looser.
Well, Megan is known for a signature party trick in which she pours alcohol into women's mouths.
Okay.
But that doesn't make you an alcoholic.
That's the opposite. That's
Is there a term for someone who makes someone an alcoholic?
Absolutely, I imagine they're probably an enabler.
Yeah, enabler. Right,
but if you're pouring alcohol in other people's mouths first and foremost, I think that
paint them under the same. You could.
It's a good bold strategy,
but don't you
to hide your own drinking? I guess is constantly pouring alcohol in other people's.
If you have
mouths.
A line about alcoholism, though, and your party trick is to be giving, you're broadly criticizing.
That's not how alcoholics drink, though. Not to make light of that, but like it's. That's a party vibe. That's not like whenever you see some footage of alcoholics, they're not like lining up at a bar having Megan the Stallion.
No, but if you are criticizing drinking culture, that is, you would call them alcoholic. That's alcoholic behavior without being technically correct. You know what I mean?
Doesn't feel specific enough that one to me.
Okay. All right. The following
that
year,
could be general. You're in the music industry. Like there's
alcohol
everywhere.
Like if beefs were a legal thing, this is how you and I launch our defense. The following year, Minaj went on her Beats One show, Queen Radio, to air out an anonymous celebrity who allegedly tried to pressure her into drinking while she was pregnant with her child. This is Minaj saying this. She also claimed that this person advised her to go to the clinic. After the broadcast, Megan called the allegations a lie. Minaj seemingly struck at the Grammy winner again on her 2023 single, Ruby Red DeSleaze.
Okay.
With the line, I don't fuck with horses since Christopher Reeves. Which is pretty damn good. I mean, that's a fucking good line. Like, I mean, there's so much going on in there. Like, wow. A bar on the song FTCU.
That one I will take.
Yeah.
That one where, Your Honor?
Yeah. The Alcoholics one was a bit like grey area.
As our little legal firm where we defend
rapper beefs.
Rapper beefs. I'm going to have to concede that one was.
Anderson & Clawson Associates.
Rapper beefs.
Yeah. We specialise in defending rappers from beefs. A bar on the song FTCU.
Yes.
Stay in your Tory lane.
Yeah.
Has also been interpreted as a head on Meghan. Well, that's pretty like explicit, right? Stay in your Tory lane.
In your Tory lane because of Tory.
Yep.
Lane.
Specifically, her highly publicised trial.
Man, that one does feel like it's.
Well, that's literal.
Just literally saying what the thing is. It's not really a mystery to be solved, that one, I think.
However, the release of Hiss on January 26th of this year escalated a simmering, somewhat forgettable beef to another level.
Okay.
The Meghan's Law line sent the internet into a tizzy.
Oh, no.
Now, can I just, little editor's note, before we started recording this episode, Mike and I were talking about this subject and you were like, this is old hat. Like, this is done and dusted. I was panicking a bit because I'm like, well, you know, the whole point of reading this was like a topical beef. But you were saying that this is old news?
Well, only as a person who's like chronically online and on Twitter. It's
when
something
news
that
changes
has,
every 24 yeah,
yeah.
hours,
like, right? Yeah. I guess it just sort of, it hasn't been resolved or like gone either way. Like they haven't made up or it hasn't kept going. So people have just sort of stopped talking about
this
it.
This is modern times, Charlie.
Yeah.
Things just flare up for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And then
everyone
just moves on.
Moves on.
And there's no follow up about it. The thing that we were also worried about last week.
The dress is blue.
Can you understand? I can't even remember that thing you're talking about because there's been three things since then.
The Meghan's Law line sent the internet into a tizzy with listeners immediately connecting the lyric to Minaj's spouse. When Minaj reconnected with her high school boyfriend in 2018, fans quickly discovered his criminal history, including in 1995, a conviction for the attempted rape of a 16-year-old girl. Since then, Petty's victim has been vocal about the threats she's received from the couple. Well, that's bloody charming. Over the weekend, Minaj took several digs at Megan, mocking her assault by Lanes and even her mother, who passed away from brain cancer in 2019. Oh. I thought the Christopher Reeve line was pretty harsh. Many of these remarks ended up on Bigfoot, the title being a jab at Megan's tall frame, which was released on Sunday night. In the roughly four-minute track, Minaj recycles online conspiracies and negative comments surrounding Megan's trial with Lanes and references her deceased mother multiple times. 3 minutes in, the music drops out and Minaj goes on an ASMR-style rant, promising a second installment. Despite its provocative lyrics, the song has yet to elicit a direct response from Megan. Have you heard his?
I have. I would say I'm probably a bigger Megan Thee Stallion fan than a Nicki fan. I have a lot of friends who are big Nicki fans, but she's also someone who is like and Azalea Banks, where her Wikipedia is just full of like beefs that she's had with various other celebrities.
I watched a documentary on Nicki Minaj once that was like, she went to the Fame School in New York. Like she was an actor or studying to be an actor. Like this, her Barbie persona, the whole thing, like it's something that she's created and now like occupies. But like she was like a theatre kid and now she's like making songs about people's...
No.
Dead mums and stuff.
No, well, she warned us. First things first, she'll eat our brains. No, her verse on Monster, that Kanye West song, is like one of the best like rap verses of all time. It's like brutal. It's incredible. But she seems,
Okay.
Who knows? But there seems to be some.
Okay. Is this?
I hope everyone's okay.
Is this the feud that fans want?
No.
As rap becomes an increasingly dominant force in mainstream culture, beefs have evolved into highly anticipated spectacles. The results can range from shockingly amusing, like Pusha T exposing Drake's secret son. Do you know anything about that?
I mean, Drake had a secret son and Pusha T exposed it.
To Deadly, like the East Coast, West Coast rivalry of the 90s, most famously. Regardless, there's a level of novelty required to keep the public enthralled. In their best iterations, Beefsa exercises in myth-making, an opportunity for each rapper to reach legendary status or reaffirm the power. In the case of Minaj versus Megan, though, the novelty aspect is missing. Right. Okay, there's nothing fun about this.
No.
The apparent digs at each other are built upon information the fans are already well aware of.
Oh, okay.
So there's nothing news being
revealed. So we need some secret sort of...
Yeah.
Yeah, you need a little bit more vague.
That's right, because I think about that Machine Gun Kelly Eminem beef, and Machine Gun Kelly has a whole line in it about how Eminem called his record company to say drop Machine Gun Kelly or whatever it was, because he made a joke about wanting to date Hailey when she was old enough or something like that. And that was meant to be like the secret. And then Eminem responded and said, I never fucking had that conversation. Like, what are you talking about here? What are you like? I mean, not like that.
Be great.
What are we even talking about here?
Be great if that's how one rapper like
responds
to beefs. One does a big call out and the other one's just like, well, actually.
I never said that. That's incorrect. That, I believe, is
a misrepresentation.
I will not stand for such slander. You, sir, have offended me. And I shall not stand for it. I say good day to you, sir. Good day. On one hand, this has been received well online by Megan's fans and general listeners.
Uh-huh.
As of publication, 5 versions of the song occupy top 10 spots on the iTunes charts.
Okay.
In addition to the track topping the Apple Music Top 100 charts. This is how out of touch I am. You can have 5 versions of the same song on the charts. We're looking at you, young person. Answer us.
Well, I'm unaware of this as well. I assume it must be like remixes or like, I guess remixes. The huge thing now also is the sped up versions.
What?
Is like, which I've What's only that? Noticed recently. Well, it's a big TikTok thing, is that songs will go viral on TikTok, but they're like sped up versions of the regular songs. And now artists, I noticed recently with the SZA song, she released the single and then it had like an a cappella version and then a sped up version just like released already on Spotify.
What? Why?
Because everything is like quicker now.
The videos,
they speed it up for the video.
You can listen to it on high speed. Like, why do you need to, like, it released at high speed?
Because everyone's getting quicker and quicker. We need everything to be quicker and quicker.
So, but then the TikTokers take the sped up version and speed it up again? Like, is this some kind of pile of game?
No, so it's like a retroactive thing.
Until it explodes to your phone.
Sped it up again.
We're going to rip a hole in the time. Yeah. I have to check out. I don't know what's going on anymore.
It's something that artists are doing now because of TikTok, basically.
Because of TikTok.
Okay.
TikTok, mate.
But I would say part of it is probably just features or remixes or things like that.
That makes sense though, right? Because the best thing that could happen censored for your version. Single is a TikTok video explodes and your track was used. So that's what you're hoping for, right? Let's release a sped up version of whatever it is and then some influencer planks. Do people still plank?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the number one thing on TikTok is planking. The popular...
Eat a pod and plank. Bath salts and pods and pods. Planking.
I have another answer for you as well for the 5 versions. Part of it is that they will have explicit and clean versions. And clean. So that's already 2 versions there.
That's back in the old man days. They used to do that as well.
That's
remember
right.
that? You get a parental explicit like on NWA albums and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Be careful. There's some swears in this.
I mean, there's heaps of swears.
Heaps of swears.
There is heaps of swears.
Have you heard of the F and the S word?
Yeah, but also the N word.
Oh, yeah, like lots of that. It's actually the name of the band, believe it or not. Wait till we tell you what NWA stands for. It's not an Orang Women's Association, I'll tell you that much.
They say that.
It takes up the entire warning.
They've just let guys freestyle. I mean, it's actually pretty good, but there's some fruity language.
I did read an article not long ago about like 10 things that you'll no longer find in popular music. And and it was talking about that, they're trying to compress songs and songs like tighter and tighter and tighter. So there's no solos anymore. Like you don't hear instrumental solos in songs. And it's like, that's a shame. Like I used to love like when, you know, someone would whip out like slash a door like a guitar solo or something. But it's like, we don't have time for that shit. Got to get on TikTok.
It'll come back though.
Do you think it will?
Yeah, because we can't, it's like iPhone sizes. Sometimes it's good that they're small and then they're big and none of us have ever worked out why one's better than the other or vice versa. We just go through trends and times when we will get so in, we will get so small and so like that we will crave things that are longer again, or that those solos will be repurposed in like, you know, 18 minute, like saxophone like tracks on like, you know, some trance thing that someone listens to while they're doing DMT.
Just the saxophone solo from Baker Street just on loop.
Yeah, exactly.
It did actually make me think at that Pink concert, because, you know, obviously there's been heaps of talk. You see that, some AI company who released a bunch of 1 minute videos showing how far the technology's come in the last year. Mm. Like, you remember the Will Smith eating spaghetti?
And yes.
So from that to now, it's like, I mean, it's photorealistic. It's insane. Yeah. It's only a minute, but obviously it's going to you know, my job's fucked. Anyone who creates images for a living is fucked. Design, fucked. Architecture, fucked. Lawyers, accountants, all fucked. But then live performance. I'm like, people still want to, you're okay, because you we can keep doing stand-up. People are going to want to see live shows.
Are they?
Aren't they?
I don't know.
Now you make me doubt it. There's 40,000 people at Pink. People still want to see live shows.
I want to see Pink and Taylor Swift.
Well, I think as long as you can, as it's original and it's live, people will want to see it.
But you think that, I mean, again, like we're about to just get into this world where, like you said, all these things are so easy for people to do that even when they've been done by hand, like I think James Fosdyke, who does all our original artwork, sometimes people undervalue, I think, the work that he puts
into. Including me. Where I'm like, can you get this done in 2 days? And he's like, no, Charlie.
But, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into everything that he does for us. But, like, people sometimes, I think, ascribe it to being, you know, AI or, you know, computer generated in some way, because they are just used to things being able to be done that way now. So even if you're not doing something that way, people kind of devalue it because they know it could be done more easily regardless. So I do think that.
Well, maybe there'll just be a split. There'll be there may be just a generation like, you know, Iona's or the next generation after that who are just like, we want to consume everything online. Why would you want to go out into the, like, movie going has sort of become like that.
Yeah.
Like the experience for some people of going to the cinema is fucking gross. Like, why would I want to go into a room filled with strangers who are coughing and eating and, you know, checking their phones and shit? I can't concentrate. I'd rather just stay at home where I'm comfortable, watch it on my big TV with surround sound. Like, that is how I want to consume my movies. Uh-huh. But that's just a generational or an attitude thing, right? So maybe it's subgenres of entertainment. Live will be not as big as it was, but it'll still exist.
I mean, I don't, look, he.
Will's just sighing for anyone who's wondering what's going on.
I'm just wondering if we're.
Pensively sighing.
We're too quickly done with the world, if you know what I mean. Like that we are so quickly going to be done with truth and being able to create things by hand as human beings and be part of the world on like the planet and world in which we live, that we seem to be so quickly pushing ourselves towards
oblivion.
This world that changes everything that it is to be a human being so demonstrably.
In
you
one
know?
Go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen the new South Park episode? The one that.
No.
They're brilliant, obviously, but they. The premise is like AI is obviously taking over everything. And so the only occupations of value anymore are like trades or people who work with their hands and do things, because everyone else becomes so reliant on AI. We've all forgotten how to change light bulbs and stuff. So the new Elon Musk's and Jeff Bezos has become like tradies. And so they're turning up at like, you know, Home Depot car parks, and there's just like lawyers and accountants there holding up signs, like looking for work, and like getting the back of their ute. You know, we've got some work for you. They're flying around in like private jets. And it's like, I feel like, because Gemma and I watched this AI video and we're like, oh, it'll be only a matter of time. Like advertising will be all AI soon, especially like things like beauty, modeling.
I mean,
you can create models with perfect kind of like
especially
proportions.
Especially advertising.
Yeah. Because like, it's so expensive to
I mean, that's the one that, and it's the one where they care less about artistic integrity.
Yeah.
It's absolutely going to go for advertising first
mm-hmm.
because they don't have those same artistic and ethical framework through which they view often what it is they do. Some people will still go to the effort of doing it in a realistic way, but so much of that other advertising will be absolutely made up of.
Well,
and it's such a different direction from what the old days of advertising that you hear about from people who are in the industries where it was like, we're going to shoot this in Berlin.
That's right. We're on the top of the Eiffel Tower.
Right, yeah.
People dancing on the top of the Empire State Building.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no, that will definitely go. But even there's an article in the Hollywood Reporter, Tyler Perry, the actor, he has his own studio. And he was just about to spend $800 million building new sound stages and stuff. But then he got a presentation from an AI company and he's like, I don't need to. I don't need to build sets anymore. You know, I don't even need to have two actors in the same room anymore. Like I can literally shoot them in two different places and I can composite them at the same time. He was saying it as a warning, not that I'm going to do it, but it's like he said, we need more guardrails because what they showed me was so terrifying and they can do it so easily. Like it's only going to take one studio to look at the profit margins and go like, well, why would we ever employ anyone again? Like we don't need gaffers, we don't need grips, we can have perfect weather conditions, you need a snowstorm, you need this, you need that. It's all going to happen. So what are we doing? Like, so is the answer that we just accept the onslaught of AI and what it's going to do to most professions and then just install universal basic income? Because we've built this capitalist society which requires we work for money, which we then use the money to put back into the economy and that's how we keep everything going. But I feel like it's not going to happen. I feel like there's going to be four companies who are like, we're going to make all the money and you're all fucked.
And what gives you that impression? The fact that that's how things always work?
Always go, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But like, you know, there have been kind of, there are like, you know, it's always Scandinavia, like Scandinavian towns that have trialed universal basic income and found it's worked. But it's just like, look at the way we tried to respond to COVID. We couldn't get any consensus on this thing that is like, the facts are kind of indisputable. Like, sure, there's kind of stuff we're learning about it that's new information and stuff, but we just couldn't agree. Or climate change, you know, like we can't agree on that. So how the fuck are we going to agree on this?
How are you doing? You okay?
I started thinking about what else I can do.
Oh my God.
Like what other skills I have.
I mean, I agree with everything that you've said, by the way. Like I'm not.
It's terrifying though, but it's happening so fast.
And when you hear it all in a row, I realize when I hear you say that back to me, how annoying I am at parties because that is exactly what I am like all the time.
Yeah.
You've caught me. Like that's what I always am like. I'm like, what are we doing? Yeah, fucking. We've already apologized on this podcast for the fact that, like, you know, when we first started doing it, we said that there should be more superhero movies and they should be in a multi-universe. But the thing that I do not apologize for is my simplistic take on AI. These threats of AI, because I do believe that my worry is, as it has always been, we've seen it already with social media. We've got an example of how this plays out.
Mm.
They sell us all the benefits. You know, we're going to cure all these diseases. We're going to do all these sort of things.
Connect the world.
They get us all to test it for free. They get us playing with ChatGPT and, you know, helping them program their fucking things. It all expands exponentially. It only benefits a small handful of people and the rest of the people around it are grifters. And then there are demonstrable ills that eventually come from it that we haven't even contemplated at this stage, that by the time we are seeing the ramifications of them, things have moved on so much that there is no way of repairing or getting back to what we had in the first place.
I think that's the scary part, though, is that it's the changes are happening so quick and in such giant leaps that even if you're a fucking like computer engineer or an expert, you can't even keep up. Like, how is the average person meant to
that's
understand
the thing, right?
Where,
like,
this is all going?
This is where you go, am I just an old person complaining that things were, you know, like I'm scared and I'm old and everything's speeding up too much and has this, you know, like, because you don't want to be that person.
No.
But that's, I don't think this is that.
No.
Because the speed of evolution of these technologies is advanced to a level where our capacity to have a conversation around what the ramifications of them are, it can't happen at the same speed as the technologies evolve. So it's always one of those things where we're just going to get further and further behind.
This is the plot of Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, the AI. The AI is already one step ahead. It knows we're having this conversation.
Of course it is. But, I mean, it is.
I've got this
All my stuff's already on the public record. When it comes from me first. I'll know day one.
I have a mate who made quite a bit of money in his previous occupation and so is sort of now retired and he's bought a big bit of land and he's teaching himself how to be a farmer. And I'm like, oh, that's, you know, what a beautiful thing to do, like just to take all your money and invest it in the land. He's like, no, like, because the end of the world's coming. Yeah. Like, we need to learn how to grow our own food and have your own water supply and stuff. He's like, this is, for him, it's very much a kind of next stage of life. It's like, you just want to have some surety and some security around things.
Maybe that's why I've become more interested. I've noticed that I've been asking my brother and my father more questions about the farm.
Can I come back? I will milk some cows. Let me back.
Teach me how
to
do it.
But it's true. But that shit is going to be the most valuable commodity. And it's just, I don't.
That's good. Maybe I'll go back and I'll, because like technically, and again, I hope this is in a very long time, but let's just speculate hypothetically for the sake of this timeline. Say we accelerate. So my dad's 80 now, my mum's, you know, like in her 70s, right? So let's go forward 25, 30 years. They've both lived very good lives, but maybe, you know, it's like that sort of, you know, time. The world has advanced 20 or 30 years as well. And I myself am like, you know, now 70, 80, right? Yeah. Like, you know, so that's what age I am. But there's this piece of land that I have, you know, back in the country. Do I go home and like...
the age of 70, just relearn.
Like, you know, just like 80 years old.
Do you reckon you could pick up, is anything dormant in your subconscious?
I don't think so. No. I think I'd have to start now. Like if I thought to be ready for 80, like, you know, to be ready for the plan, I think this would be the latest I could possibly make the decision. So if I see it going that way, that there's some value in me having my own land and like building it, it should be a decision that I am making right now. I should be going, enough of this nonsense, enough of coming into this bloody studio and talking to you about these bullshit things that don't matter to the world. I'm going to go home. I'm going to beg forgiveness of my father and my brother. I'm the prodigal son. I will return. I will take my small piece of land and I will build myself.
I think it's not a bad plan.
Right?
To be honest. But it's
not the worst plan.
It's cold in Gippsland.
I mean, the weather is getting more unpredictable. Cold might be something that we're looking for in 5, 10 or 15 years.
Keep doing the show from your farm.
Do you reckon we should Joe Rogan it?
What do you mean?
Well, like get the land, like, you know, get like a bit of a compound and like, you know, I'll put in like
warehouse.
People can come and like Dave Chappelle
fire,
style come and do gigs in the,
I don't think it's a
like
bad
a libertarian
idea.
Paradise.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Except we're not libertarian.
No, but like a cool take on
lefty paradise.
A lefty slash, but you can also fire some flamethrowers.
Yeah. And do some archery. Yeah, I think that could be the part. I mean, in all honesty, like, it's too late for me. Like, you at least have access to land. Mm-hmm. So I either have to, because I was like, even, like, I saw an ad online, like, photographers, their job's gone. Like, headshots and stuff can all be AI now. You scan your face, the AI can create you a perfect headshot. Yep. I even saw an ad for, you know, like, people get, like, boudoir photos taken. Mm-hmm. And it's like a woman submitted, like, just an ordinary photo of herself, and the AI sent her back, like, 10, you know, she's been photoshopped and it looks like her. It doesn't look artificial. It looks like she's, you know, this like a Victoria's Secret model. So it's like we're all going to be living in this world where no one's truly themselves. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got this image that has been, you know, there'll be real-time silking that you can do on a video call. So it's like...
Okay, so when you can't trust if anything's real anymore again.
It's post-truth society.
We only had truth for such a little amount of time.
So barely any time at all.
A precious little amount of time. And then we were like, we're done with that.
Yeah.
It feels like to me, like, and I mean, people, this wouldn't surprise people, like based on all the sort of style of work that I've done in my life, but Like, truth just feels like such an important principle.
Mm.
Like, I've always, like, tried to talk about, wrestling with the idea of what is true, or, like, how we're being misrepresented, or, like, what the nature of truth is, or how you can even judge the nature of that truth. And now, like, we're about to, it just feels like we're, if we're not in it already, like, this post-truth society, we've certainly been, like, you know, dipping our toes in the shallow end of it. Mm. Like, we've already entered the water. It just is now, how deep into this water are we going to get? You already can't trust. There are effective deep fakes of, you know, like news footage and all sorts of things. Yeah. And because just of the amount of information there is, there's not enough in real time fact checking going on that, like, yeah. So you can misrepresent things. You don't need the most sophisticated of all technology to actually misrepresent things anyway.
Mm.
How do you verify anything if you see some video that, like, you know, has been AI created or is deepfake or whatever, and then you go, oh, well, I'll Google it to see, and they've just bought all the optimized search engines, and, like, the article you click through to is by the same AI that built the fucking video that you...
Yeah.
How do we go back to knowing what's true anymore again?
Well, you just got to assume that nothing's true.
Oh, great.
In a post-truth society, nothing is true.
Nothing is true.
Because...
So what effect does that have on our society if nothing is true?
Anarchy? It's the purge. You don't have to, there's no consequences.
So anyway, is this all good stuff that we're rushing ourselves towards? Does this feel like we're in a good place to...
I don't know.
Amy?
Yeah.
You're young.
Yes.
How do you feel about this stuff? Like, does this sound like two old people just not understanding what the world is?
Can we just clarify? Do you remember a world pre-internet or not?
I have lived in, like, yes. Look, I am 26. It's not really pre-internet,
you
but
pre-everyone
always having internet all the time. I grew up with long stretches of time where we didn't have internet at home or a computer in the house. But I definitely agree that we're moving at a pace that seems way too quick, that if, like, lawyers and all of these, like, that important people can't keep up with, like,
architects,
whether the president doctors really said something.
I mean,
or
our listening, so many people in the medical community, but they're already having, like, robot surgeons who they're doing trials which are incredibly accurate and precise. They don't get fatigued. They don't get emotional. Like, we're all going down. And there's nothing. We've just got to start throwing AI into the river, like the e-bikes.
With every invention that has a positive impact, there seems to be about 5 to 10 negative impacts that it could have.
Yes, this is the point, right? Mm. Like, is they sell us on what the good side of this is going to be, and they don't sell us on the negatives. Consequences of it.
But are they selling us on the good side? Because the only chat you hear about it is it's like, this is going to devastate, like, industry.
No, I don't think I think that's really specifically what you're hearing about it. All I hear is, I hear a lot of techno optimism from people.
Really?
You know? People are going, oh, I did this thing on ChatGPT. Here's what I'm doing on blah, blah, blah. I'm getting AI to build this for me. Or, like, for everyone who works as a, like, photographer or whatever, there's the other side of that equation, which is the person who was going to pay someone for those photos, who suddenly is like,
the consumer.
You know what? I can actually do my own comedy festival poster this year and actually do it really well, like, without having to employ a graphic designer and having to employ a photographer and put all these upfront costs for what it is that, you know, I'm going to do. So, like, I don't think that there is... And the other thing is that most of the positive story gets pushed out by people who have the money and have the resources, you know? And when you hear the negative pushback, like, I mean, the problem is that the people who are going to be in charge of it are the same people who are in charge of the internet.
Yeah.
And they're no good.
No.
Most of the people in charge of the internet are no good.
Do you know who Jacques Fresco is? Have you heard of Jacques Fresco?
He invented outdoor dining, right?
Yeah, it's got a chain of pasta restaurants. No, he's a futurist and a philosopher or whatever. But he's sort of... he has always talked about, like, the faults of capitalism and where it's leading us is, like, we should really be basing a society on a resource-based economy, which is like, well, what do we have and what do we needs, you know, what do people need and what do we have?
Yeah.
And that's the value of your economy is based on kind of your access to water and food and agriculture and all that kind of stuff. And he's been saying for like 30 years, it's like this march towards, you know, more strident forms of capitalism that sort of pillage the earth and disenfranchise groups of people. It's all going to reach ahead. And he was not even talking about AI. He was just simply talking about just meat and potatoes capitalism, like old school, like miners and developers and all that kind of stuff. Like, this is that on steroids, you know. Is there any way, like, if you take away the profit motive, which is what is firing all this up, like if there was a magic wand where money disappeared, and
yeah,
then is AI a good thing? Like, can AI be used only for good? Because the issue
if you
is
take
the
away
motive.
The profit motive, right? Because of course that's the issue. Like, scams are always the, you know, in the old days it used to be the porn industry that was the early adopters of all the technology. These days it's scams. Yeah, they're the first people who work out, oh, we can use, you know, this like voice technology to be able to like scam your bank account or scam you for a call or whatever it might be. Mm. Like, the amount of like emails and phishing and all those sort of things that you're going to get that are all because of AI. And
oh my God, yes.
So it's the bad actors, right?
Yeah.
It's the fact that these tools can be used by bad actors is always the problem.
Yeah.
It's not the technology itself that is, you know, good or bad. It's just the fact that you know that it's going to be used by bad people to do bad things. And you know, even at the level it's already at, people are getting ripped off all the fucking time.
So take money out of the equation and yeah, no one can get ripped off.
That's right.
But how do we do that? This is my communist manifesto.
Yeah, this. I mean, it's good that we've started with pink and moved all the way to red.
So, I mean, it's terrifying. It's terrifying. Let's get to some mail.
This is Tofop, by the way. This is Tofop, the podcast that takes you from pink to Megan the Stallion.
And finishes in bone-chilling accounts of AI destroying the world.
Yeah.
Okay, if you want to get in contact with us, you can. Everyonerelax.co is the website. And if you want to speak to us, you just fill out a submission form like Shavi has done. Wants to know about the WIC format. Hey guys, just wanted to ask if you have any insights into AI, into John Wick-like films that weren't as big of hits. I know I've got a major John Wick vibes when I watched Nobody, which was definitely a post-Wick production, but was a movie like The Equalizer as well received? I'm watching The Equalizer at the moment, so I suppose it had some success. But is old badass retired guy kills a bunch of assholes almost a genre now? Yeah. I mean, it's been a genre for a while. I think Liam Neeson
lives
off that genre.
Yeah. But I mean, Taken originally and then every other movie that is basically Taken.
And even prior to that, like Death Wish was, you know, that's kind of like the...
But
like
I think this modern day incarnation of good actors becoming like action, like old man action actors, like that's a bit more... You know,
that's specific to the European market too, because action films translate well. Old stars still have currency in Europe, so I think that is the specific target for that. He's saying about is this a genre of films and the intrigue of the coins and the society, is that what elevates John Wick above those other films? Also, the fight choreography.
I think the fight choreography. I think the mythology is ridiculous and doesn't actually necessarily elevated above other ridiculous mythologies, but there is something about I think the way they use the mythology in the mix in the John Wick films is the right amount. Like, they never feel like that. I don't feel like they ever have the temptation to George Lucas style explain where midichlorians come from and how much force you can have. Like, there's a real sense of like, you pay with a gold coin, which is worth whatever you need it to be worth at the time.
I mean, I think that's a good point. I think the reason why the John Wick films work maybe better is they don't take themselves seriously. No. Like the Taken films and all that kind of stuff. Like, it is very much a nod and a wink to the audience. Which is,
it's a heightened universe.
And that's why.
Like, I mean, the idea that there is, like, for example, a radio station that is doing live sort of commentary of like a hitman battle is a wink to the audience that this isn't, you know.
And that's why the fourth one, I think, is easily the best. Yeah. Because they fully embrace the absurdity of it. And it's almost like a silent movie, like a Buster Keaton or Charlie Chaplin film in the physical comedy, like that sequence of him trying to get up the stairs.
It's amazing.
it's so good. I love those films. On John Wick, someone wants to know if we have seen the very terrible Continental TV series. Is this the first misstep in the John Wick universe. That's
from
Troy.
It called the Very Terrible Continental?
No, that sounds like a Harry Potter.
Yeah, sequel. Harry the Potter very terrible, and the Very the Terrible Continental Hotel.
I have not seen it.
Neither have I.
But I think that it's not if it's not, if no Keanu, no John Wick. That's yeah. What, that's what.
No,
I
agree with that.
Because I know they're sort of setting up a like it'll be the other guy now, won't it? The dude with the shotgun from the last John Wick film, and the dog.
Oh, yeah, okay.
John Wick's mate.
Yeah.
John Wick's mate, I believe, is what they're calling.
I mean, I don't know if I have any interest outside
of Keanu.
John Wick himself.
No. And I also think, too, that it's not a strong enough universe.
No.
That you can keep, like, spinning stuff off. The idea is very simple. It's very contained, and that's what makes it work.
Oh, yeah. I only care about all the backstories of the various families and whatever. Only in relation to Keanu Reeves, into yes. John Wick.
Yeah. But it is Keanu Reeves. And I think that's the most important part is we know that he's doing his own stunts. Yeah. We know he's learnt jiu-jitsu. We've seen the videos of him at the shooting range.
What if they do like Joan Wick and they just do a reboot like where it's a female action star?
No.
And it's...
Don't. This is like Marvel Universe.
It's Melissa McCarthy.
We're going to gender swap. We're going to ethnic swap. Whatever we can do to keep this thing alive. No.
Emma Stone.
Just come up with... How about this? Come up with a new concept. Completely new concept. I'm sure there's plenty of like filmmakers out there with... You know, great ideas with like female leads. Let's make one of those.
Zendaya is Joan Wick.
You haven't been watching any press, but they had the June 2 premiere the other day. And all the
June 2. I wasn't even doing a bit there. Like, I literally thought you said June 2.
Dune 2. They premiered somewhere, and all the cast came out in like wacky. High, would you call it haute couture? Like, you know, really crazy costumes. Sure. Like Zendaya was in like this. She looked like the robot from Metropolis.
Were they ones that like were...
Not related to Dune.
Not related to...
But I guess stylistically similar.
In the Duneverse.
Well, just they looked futuristic and alien.
Uh-huh.
But it was like Zendaya. Fuck, I don't know anything.
Zendaya.
Thank you. Zendaya was in this... Tin Man outfit, like with the butt cut out.
Yeah.
And it was like...
No butt.
Well, I mean, there was a butt, but it was Perspex, transparent buttocks, transparent buttocks.
Sure, all right.
So I think...
I don't feel like comfortable with that.
Is, she's furiously Googling an image to show you. This will help me explain what's going on.
All right.
But it was funny because I'm like, all right, so you've done a sci-fi movie and you want to promote the film. Like, whose decision was it? Because it wasn't just her, it was also Florence Pugh's in this like giant flowing thing. But then Josh Brolin just rocks up in a tuxedo or whatever it is.
He's like, I'm not here for this.
I'm not joining in.
I'm
not putting on a Tin Man costume or doing some like crazy. All right. Can you look behind you?
All right. Oh. Yeah. I would have thought, if I saw that, I would have assumed that
was a costume from the film.
Yeah.
It must be like, do you think she wears that on the red carpet and... like
then what? Like
then waddles into the cinema and sits down in her
for the whole movie.
Tin Man costume, like,
just trying not to rustle,
creak or squeak.
Because it's also, I imagine, an atmospheric, you know, sparse moments in June, and it's like one of those things.
It's like I remember seeing an interview with. Do you remember Rose McGowan? Back when she was dating Marilyn Manson, she went to the Grammys or something. And she wore like just like a G-string and like a string dress that was completely transparent.
I mean, yeah, maybe.
And she spoke about like, you know, she felt like hot and sexy on the red carpet and stuff. But then she sat down at the awards ceremony.
Yeah.
And she's like, after about 2 hours, you're like, ugh. Well, I wish I wasn't wearing this.
I was wearing tracksuit pants.
It's quite uncomfortable to sit through the whole
thing. Well, that's what I think about all fashion. I mean, generally it's like, if you just need to get your photo taken for something. Like, then, absolutely, I understand, like, dressing up in something nice, but then having to wear that thing. Oh.
Can I ask you on that? So, like, I've just noticed, I don't know what I was watching, but, like, I saw this thing, and it was, like, Adam Sandler and then and Will Ferrell and, like, maybe Zach Galifianakis, these comedy superstar dudes. And they were all dressed like the biggest slobs.
Yeah.
Like, literally, if you had to, like, cast someone as, like... the worst dressed slob on the planet. Like, Will Ferrell was wearing like white socks and Birkenstocks with these like daggy shorts and like a bright yellow. Like, it looked like he'd gone to a Goodwill bin and just drag out Adam Sandler in his like oversized tracksuit pants.
Basketball.
And his
he always likes to be ready to play basketball.
Yeah. And it's like, so you've become a super successful comedian. Is it like, you like, do they like wearing that? Do they not care?
What do you mean?
Or is it a bit? Like, is it part of their, because it's so goofy and ugly and weird. Like,
I think it's probably a bit of all those things, right? Like, I mean, it's comfortable. And so the message is that I am a comfortable person. I'm comfortable in my own skin. I can do what I want. I don't like conform to the norms of, you know, how I need to be successful in society. It's like the Joker's uniform in the King's Court. Like, it differentiates you from the people who are taking themselves too seriously. There's something about being dressed up that immediately adds that level of authority or someone taking themselves seriously, which you can play with as a comedian.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But like, you know.
There is a little something, I guess you're right, because whenever you see the like comedy festival posters and some comedians like tried to look like a rock star, you're always like, oh, I don't know about this. I don't know. I'm willing to laugh at you. You don't seem funny to me.
Well, I mean, there are people who have used that as their image and can play off it. But like then you have to kind of, I think, carry that into your real life a bit in your fashion and stuff as well. Yeah, like, you know, you would
be well-dressed all the time.
Yeah, I reckon the one who's done a really good job of being able to comfortable down his fashion whilst still keeping a sense of having kooky fashion is Noel Fielding. I don't know if you know Noel.
I know who he is.
Yeah,
but
right. So Noel used to be.
I believe he's in The Boosh.
Noel used to be. The Mighty Boosh?
The Mighty Boosh.
Oh, yeah, okay. So Noel used to be like very peacocked in his appearance, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas like what he's done very well
is the king of the mods.
Is he's just got more and more comfortable and loose fitting, but still with the same sort of
modish hair.
Yeah, style and whatever. And I'm just like, lots of bigger cardigans and stuff now. And I'm like, you've done a good job.
Well, your look is morphed over the years. Yeah. You're very like nail polish and thongs and almost ravey when I first met you. Yes. Like, you had a lot of rave type clothes
it's
on.
True.
And now you've sort of morphed into comedy Batman. I guess. A lot of black. Lots of black and street clothes. Like, when basic came along, you're like, perfect, high fashion, comfort clothes,
super expensive tracksuit.
That's what I want to
wear. Tracksuits that I can, like, I mean, I like clothes too that hide the myriad of sins that my body possesses, right? Like, if you have a good body, you want something that shows off your body. Whereas I want something that hides the true shape of my body, that no one could really.
You want misdirection.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
look at this. It's a triangle here.
I want the clothes to hang like they're meant to, regardless of what's going on underneath of them. And I think that like, yes, I do definitely.
You know who does that well? Muji. It all comes back to Muji. Look, I think we'll wrap it up there. That is Tofop for this week. Will, you're on tour at the moment?
I mean, do you have a side deal with Muji? I just need to point out, is this like an attempt to get?
Yeah, hopefully.
I mean, can you imagine?
They don't need us.
We're bulk recording. I mean, I think we'd only bring the brand down is honestly the truth.
Well, I don't know. I saw like Broden Kelly was modeling the other day, like a new Australian label, and he looked quite good. And I was like, oh, there's something kind of brave about you taking someone who you wouldn't ordinarily associate with fashion and putting them in there. To me, it's like, oh, I feel that's a confident brand. Like, you are so confident in what you've done. You can take someone who's not like a model and make them, you know, your spokesperson. So if Muji, you've got the balls take us on,
it'd be great. It'd be so great if like we became like the Hamish and Andy of Muji. Yeah. Right?
Next
like,
episode, you see, we're just all mooched up. We're covered in the Muji.
All public experience. We're dressing in Muji for these records. Like, we have different Muji outfits because we bulk record. It'd actually be a good sponsorship, right?
Yeah.
If we could just get like four different Muji outfits. For every, like, so that we're recording four in a row.
Yeah.
We get into our different Mujis.
Yeah.
There's one here right in the building.
Yeah.
So we can just go and pick.
Did you see it?
We can go and, we can pick up the Muji.
Yeah.
Right? Drop back the Muji later in the day.
No,
don't even.
It.
I mean, You can have a deal where you can get some Muji on the side. Okay, but I'm just
for the purpose of
I'm just saying each week.
Yeah, that's
right. We could like have
they must have new releases.
We could literally have over the year, we could have a different Muji outfit every week.
Yeah.
Dressed by Muji.
There was
exclusively
a dude
dressed
in the
by
store
Muji.
Who was wearing, I guess it's kind of like a modern take on traditional Japanese.
Yeah.
It was like a dress.
Yeah.
Like a, not a dress, like a skirt. Like it was like a white, like a samurai skirt. And he looked so confident walking around in this like, it was like raw denim kind of skirt. And I'm like, I want to wear that. Yeah. So no, next episode,
that's what
make
Muji
sure
is.
You subscribe to
you
our Patreon.
You in a raw denim skirt.
Patreon.com/everyonerelax.
I would be into it.
Yeah, me too.
If Muji want to get on board.
Have you worn a skirt? It's so comfy. Like kilt. I've worn kilts.
Worn a kilt. Yeah.
It's so good. So comfortable.
I mean, we're willing to do it. If you're a cool, hip Japanese brand who'd like to sully your name by putting two middle-aged white men in skirts
for our podcast. Okay. All right. Do you promote your show? Play, let people know
it's called Will Legitimate. It's on tour all over Australia, comedy.com.au.
And links in the episode description. That's Tape Up for this week. I'm Charlie Clawson.
Oh, well, there's it.
Everyone relax!